Tavares. Just bounces one. Rask left it out in front. Tavares scores! John Tavares sent a Spalding to Tuukka Rask.
Islanders country, hello and welcome to the Isles Blog Podcast alongside Tom DeLuca. I'm Joe Bono. A reminder to follow the entire team on Twitter at Isles Blog, and you can subscribe to the podcast via iTunes or listen at nyislesblog.com. Our guest today is John Kreiser, columnist, writer, and editor at NHL.com. You can follow him on Twitter at jkreiser77nhl. John, Joe, and Tom for the Isles Blog Podcast. Thanks for joining us again.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure.
So, John, strange win in Buffalo. Team allows only 10 shots, but somehow was in danger of blowing a second 3-0 lead to the Sabres this season. Hard to call anything a must-win game in February, but that was pretty important to secure those 2 points against a weak team like the Sabres.
Yeah, those are the type of teams that that you absolutely have to beat. And of course, they got off to the 3-0 lead, and I'm sitting here watching it at home, and I'm saying, gee, you know, maybe they could get, you know, they really need another one. They want to get 4-0, 5-0, and the Sabres got a couple of quickies. But unlike the December 27th game, the Islanders really regrouped, and the third period, the Sabres almost never had the puck, which is a good way to win. If the other guys don't have the puck, they're not going to shoot it at your net.
John, following the All-Star break, we learned that Kyle Loposo has a detached retina and he'll miss a significant amount of time. The Islanders haven't said much about the injury itself, but some doctors have come out and speculated that Loposo could be out for the year and possibly might not be the same hockey player again, or at least the same player for the near future. What are your thoughts on the injury, and could his potential return later in the year possibly hurt the Islanders?
Well, it won't hurt them because you're getting, if he's at all healthy, you're getting back to premier play. You're probably getting back probably the second best forward on your team. They've done a pretty good job so far making adjustments to being without him. And I don't think anybody, probably not even Kyle right now, knows when he's going to be back. I've seen things that he could miss the whole year and that he might not be the same. But on the other hand, I've also seen some doctors saying that he might be back within the time frame the Islanders gave, or even a little bit sooner. So you really don't know, and we won't know how good or not good Kyle is till he can actually come back and play. I would imagine he'll have a shield on at least for a while. And he plays a physical game. He's not a tall guy, but he's very, very solidly built. He can play as physically or not physically as you want. And by not physically, I mean he can emphasize his skill. Not that he's not going to be physical, but he offers you the best of both worlds because he can play either way. So far, the Islanders have managed to compensate for his absence. They've juggled things around. It'll be very interesting now because they're also without they were without Cal Clutterbuck Sunday. It sounds like they're going to be without Michael Grabner for a while again. The third time this year now. And, you know, now you're really getting into your depth forwards. Colin McDonald has, he's been up there for a couple of years now. And the fact that he's spending most of the season in Bridgeport is a real sign that you're starting to accumulate some depth. Bringing up Harry Zelnirchuk, that's somebody you largely signed for Bridgeport. He looked pretty good last night. He can play that fourth line role and give you a decent 10, 12 minutes a game. But, you know, now you're really starting to get down toward your depth people when you're starting to call up forwards from the minors.
And, John, let's talk about Colin McDonald because, obviously, he was a big part of that team in 2013 in that fourth line that got going so well towards the end of the regular season and into the playoffs. And when he's in Bridgeport, he's asked to do different things than when he's brought – up with the Island. He's a goal scorer in Bridgeport, a team leader there. But here with the Islanders, again, fits right back into that fourth line mode. Very valuable depth player, and obviously paid immediate dividends with the goal to start things off against the Sabres.
Yeah, he is a very valuable depth player. He's, but he's the kind of guy that if you can play him 10, 12, maybe 14 minutes a game, he can really help you because as Islander fans saw Sunday night, he can score. He's not totally useless offensive. In fact, he's actually, for that kind of player, for a depth player, he's a pretty good offensive player. He's had 30 goals in the minor leagues, and the AHL is not, if anything, it's tougher to score in the AHL than it is in the NHL because the way the game is taught, and there are fewer good offensive players in the AHL, because if they're any good in the AHL, they usually get called up to the NHL. He can provide some physical element. He's he fits right in. It's not like you have to break a new member into the orchestra. He already knows where the horns are and the drums are playing, and he can step right into the band and contribute easily.
John, the lights just seem to shine brighter and brighter each time Chad Johnson is placed in net. Saturday night in Boston, he has a very strong game, though losing 2-1 in a game that maybe could have set his fate with the Islanders. Are the Islanders really looking to improve their number two goaltending spot? If so, who is being targeted, and how do you see the Islanders parting with Chad Johnson if it comes down to that? Will he be dangled in a trade? Will he be waived? How do you see it unfolding?
I don't think you would waive him. You're always looking to upgrade yourself at almost any position, except maybe John Tavares. Okay, you're always looking, if you can get somebody who's better than you have at a particular role for a price you want to pay, you'll try and do it. That said, I don't think that I think that Chad really helped himself on Saturday night, because you could see him kind of growing in confidence as he went along. He was a little shaky at the start. He was leaving some rebounds out there, and his defense cleared them. By the time you got toward late second, early third period, you could see that he was much more comfortable in net, and that makes a big difference. He didn't outplay Tuukka Rask, but hey, Tuukka Rask has been playing at an obscenely good level, and he gave them a chance to win on a night when Rask really brought his A game. So that's pretty good, and they have got to, whether it's Johnson or whoever, they have got to get more from that backup goalie, because Yaroslav Halak is not a 65 game a year guy. He's never played more than 57. I would tell you somewhere in the low 50s is probably his comfort zone. And at the pace they're going, they're going to push him beyond that. They can't really afford to do that if they want to have him ready and sharp for the playoffs. And make no mistake, the 8 teams in the East that hold playoff berth now are 99.44%, as they used to say in the Ivory soap commercials, likely to make the playoffs. The Florida Panthers can't get out of their own way sometimes. They had a nice win up here. They outplayed the Islanders in the third period. They had a chance to really help themselves. Yesterday, though, they're up 2-0 on Nashville in the third period. Nashville's playing back-to-back. And they gave away a point. They gave up 2 goals in the third period and lost a shootout. And those are the type of things you can't do. That's the type where the Islanders, who had every chance to give one away yesterday, went and won. The Rangers, for example, had no excuse yesterday. Yes, I know Henrik Lundqvist wasn't there. But they were playing the Dallas Stars, who were on the second game of a back-to-back, had lost in Buffalo. And frankly, except for the third period, the Rangers were outplayed by a team that's not as good as they are. That's the type of thing that the Islanders have largely been able to avoid doing this year, and it's what will get them in the playoffs. But the 8 teams that are there now are largely jockeying for position rather than hoping that they'll make it or not make it. In the West, for example, there are still 2 or 3 teams outside the top 8. That look like they do have a chance. That's why, if you watch Dallas play the Rangers on Sunday, Dallas was absolutely desperate. They didn't mind giving the Rangers a point because they don't see the Rangers again, but they had to have that 2 points, not just one.
John Kreiser, NHL.com, is our guest. How much importance do you put into where the Islanders will finish? Things getting much tighter in the Metropolitan Division between Islanders, Penguins, Rangers, and Capitals. You talked about how the top 8 seeds in the East are pretty much locked in, although Florida is kind of looming a little bit far back. How important and significant do you feel it is for the Islanders to either win the division or, at worst, have the 2 seed to have that home ice advantage in the first round of the playoffs?
I think they want to be able to play as many home games as possible, because as fans have seen this season, the Nassau Coliseum can be a horribly tough place to play. And it's only going to get more difficult for opposing teams to win as the stakes get higher. I remember 2 years ago, Dan Biles, after the in the day off between the Sunday and Tuesday games, game three and four at the Coliseum, we asked him, you know, how did his team handle the just wall of noise at the start of that game, start of game three. And he basically said, I'm paraphrasing obviously, but he basically said not well. He said it took them quite a while to get used to it. And I think if I were the Islanders, I'd probably not want to see the Rangers, not because I don't think I can beat them because the Rangers have lost all three to the Islanders, but I would rather play a game, I'd rather open a series, open the playoffs against a team where I knew that the, you know, 99% of the fans are going to be in my corner, as opposed to a Rangers series where maybe it's 65%.
John, one player who has had trouble finding the score sheet of late is Brock Nelson. He hasn't scored a goal since January the 4th. Has this game been as bad as the numbers suggest of late, or is he just a victim of some tough luck?
Some of both. I mean, if you watched the game against Buffalo, I mean, he had a breakaway. He had a couple other good chances. Part of it is that he's on a different line. He's away from Ryan Strome and Anders Lee, and when the three kids were playing together, they seemed to mesh very well at that group. Ryan Strome is one of those guys. Looks like he can mesh anywhere. He's going to be a terrific player. Nelson is now on a line where he's not, you know, that line's not going to generate as many offensive opportunities. That said, when he gets them, he's got to put them in. He's a little snake bit, a little nervous. The rest of his game most nights is okay. He's not really hurting them defensively, but they do need him. They need him to go back to the front of the net and get hit by a few Johnny Boychuk slap shots during power plays.
John Kreiser, NHL.com, is our guest. Talked about the kid line, Nelson Strome, Anders Lee. Obviously had a lot of success when they're together. Brock Nelson has struggled since that lineup's been broken up, but Anders Lee just keeps on finding ways to put the puck in the net, regardless of who he's playing with. Now playing with the top line, another goal against the Sabres, 16 goals this season for a player that started the season in the AHL with Bridgeport. What kind of player, maybe in the league, past, present, Islanders, NHL, does Anders Lee remind you of in terms of his style, skating ability to tip pucks into the net? Who does he remind you of?
You know, I was thinking of that because I'm putting together some stuff for the game on Tuesday, and one of the little things is about Lee. He's kind of odd because he's not a passer. He's got 16 goals and 5 assists. Howie Rose joked on Sunday that he was putting together a Cy Young season,
yeah.
And he's right. He's right that he's not much of a passer, but he's a finisher, and he's a big kid. He goes to the net, and he's got. I think something that most Islander fans didn't anticipate, he's got tremendous hands. I mean, last night he scored a goal by fishing the rebound off the boards, getting control of it and sliding it back against the grain before Neuvirth could get across the net. It was a terrific piece of work, you know, hands work. You'd expect that maybe from a guy like John Tavares. You don't necessarily think of it from a young guy like Anders Lee, but you know he has a lot of deflections. A lot of his goals come when he gets in front and he gets his stick on shots from the point. He got one of those against Florida last week. He was in the slot and Travis Hamonic teed up a shot. It looked at first glance at real time like it was Ryan Strome's goal, but then you go back and look and no, it was. It was Lee getting his stick on it from the slot and putting it in. He's really got a terrific set of hands, and that's going to earn him more power play time because you want that kind of guy who can go to the net, who can make life a little miserable for the goalie. And Lee is a big, big kid. One reason that he lasted so long in his draft year was that he was splitting time. He was a terrific football player, and it wasn't really till the Islanders took him that he was that he made a full-out commitment to hockey when he went to Notre Dame.
Lubomir Vyzhnovsky has seen his share of troubles getting into the Islanders lineup of late. Last week, Jack Capuano, I believe twice, chose to skate Brian Strait over the accredited Vyzhnovsky. Is this something that we could see more of in the future if the team isn't performing well, having bigger name guys watching the game from the press box?
Don't be surprised, because in sports these days, especially the NHL, but not exclusive to it, the one lever that a coach has is playing time. If you get parked, it doesn't matter how much money you're making or anything else, that when you're parked, you're not going to run up any totals. And Vyzhnovsky had just an awful game against Florida. He turned the puck over several times. One turnover that he made led to the penalty in the third period, on which Florida scored the go-ahead goal. Halak stopped the shot after the giveaway, but the Islanders took a penalty, and Jimmy Hayes put it in the net about 10 seconds later. I don't know what would have happened if DeHaan had been healthy yesterday. It would have been interesting to see. At his best, Vyzhnovsky brings a wise old head, and he can still skate with anybody. He has he's good. He has good offensive moves, and he and Thomas Hickey, even though in today's NHL they're like a pair of munchkins out there, have very good possession numbers and really know how to. Really know how to move the puck out of their own zone. Luvo looked fine on Sunday, and if he's playing his best hockey, he's a better, more useful hockey player than Brian Strait. But he has to keep playing at that level, or he's gonna, he could earn some more bench time. They're not in a position where they can afford to have guys playing at less than their best.
NHL.com columnist, writer, editor John Kreiser is our guest. You can follow him on Twitter at jkreiser77nhl. So of course, it comes time in every interview these days when you're talking Islanders to talk about the penalty kill. Personnel-wise, it's hard to understand why a team with Johnny Boychuk, Travis Hamonic, Nick Leddy, Grabner when healthy, Franz Nielsen, Casey Cizikas, etc., can be 30th ranked in the penalty kill in the league. A lot of people have made the observation, John, throughout the year that the team is just not aggressive enough. They don't pressure the puck enough, and they just kind of sit back and allow the offense to kind of dictate the flow and get shots to the net, and they have obviously a tough time clearing the puck, have a tough time winning the faceoffs. Is it the small things, or is it a bigger issue as to why this team right now is the worst in the league when it comes to the penalty kill?
Well, there are a couple issues. One is, as you noted, that they, their overall faceoff numbers, they're not great, but they're not horrible. And actually they've been improving. They're up to around 49%. They've been down around 46% as a team, but I can't vouch for it because I haven't seen a breakdown of it, but it looks like they seem to have more trouble winning faceoffs when they're playing a man down. The game against Florida last week, when Jimmy Hayes scored the go-ahead goal on the power play, that came right off of a lost faceoff, and they paid a price for it. Peter Laviolette, when he was here back in the early 2000s, really preached an aggressive penalty kill, and that seemed to work very well for him. I would think that the Islanders would be better off, doing what they did yesterday on Sunday against Buffalo. They were very, very aggressive on the penalty kill, and now Buffalo is not the best team in the world because they have the league's 30th ranked power play, but the Islanders really seemed to discombobulate them. They were. The Sabres were just thrown off. Maybe they weren't expecting the Islanders to be as aggressive as they were. And the thing that's puzzled me is 3 or 4 years ago, the Islanders had one of the most dangerous shorthanded combinations in Franz Nielsen and Michael Grabner when they played together. They haven't used that now for the last couple of years. And I understand, perhaps... You don't want to, certainly with Nielsen, who's about 175 pounds wringing wet by this time of year, you don't want to you don't want to play him into the ground because he's too good at, you know, he's too valuable in other roles. But I might, you know, they don't, they were so deadly on the pen. They generated 13 shorthanded goals by themselves. That's a lot. And they haven't played them much. And the thing to know, too, speaking of shorthanded goals, is that the Islanders do lead the league with 8 of them. So it takes away a little bit of the, you know, a little bit of the sting from what you're giving up. And they've also played much smarter hockey this year. They're among the bottom two or three in fewest power play attempts allowed. So if you're going to struggle on the penalty kill, the thing you really want to do then is just stay out of the box. And they've done a terrific job most times staying out of the box. The number of power plays that they're giving up is exceedingly low, and that helps. That helps a lot. If you gave the Islanders a perfect world, they'd love to play, you know, 55 minutes a game at 5-on-5 because they think that they'll beat you.
John, you said before that every team is always looking to upgrade in some way. The trade deadline is pretty close. We know that the Islanders have a lot of depth, but what area do you think they're really looking to improve on?
You might like a guy who, you know, who can add a little size on defense. A couple of their guys are a little smaller, and there are some teams where it comes in really handy to have that extra size on defense. But Garth Snow has an interesting dilemma. Assuming that he's going to get Oposo back at some time in the reasonably near future, I don't know what you know, he's got a really, really tight group of players. They really are. Adding Johnny Boychuk to that mix has helped a lot. The maturity, I mean, John Tavares and Kyle Oposo now, they're not 20, 21, 22 years old. These are established players now. They have, they're maturing, and it's a really, you know, really nice tight group. And I don't know, this is a decision Garth's going to, you know, and I'm sure he's been contemplating it already. I mean, it's not like it's going to hit him over the head tomorrow. But you have a group with some really good chemistry that's been playing well. If you have really good chemistry and your team isn't, you know, is going to miss the playoffs, that's one thing. But this is a group that that is both successful and really likes each other. And I'm not sure to what extent you want to go tamper with that, unless you can make a major upgrade somewhere. They are, you know, it's a pretty good group. They like each other. They play for each other. As that was the old Al Arbor criteria that he wanted guys who played for each other. And this group really does seem to play for each other. And it will be interesting to see what they're willing to, do and what they're willing to give up. They have two terrific defense prospects at Bridgeport in Griffin Reinhart and Ryan Pulock, who's injured now, but had 12 goals in a pretty fast span. They have Michael Dalcali, who is supposed to be, you know, everybody thinks he's going to be a can't-miss prospect, and I haven't heard anybody tell me any reason why he won't be. They have Joshua Hosang, who Garth traded up to get last year, and who is tremendously talented, probably might need another year in junior hockey because he's not that big. He's gonna have to get bigger and stronger. But that's pretty common. You don't get a lot of kids right out of junior who their first and even sometimes second draft year. But are they willing to give up any of those guys? And I would suspect that Garth would have to be knocked over, really bowled over with an offer before he's going to give up anything substantial, especially for a rental.
John, final question. Islanders starting a 4-game homestand against the Oilers on Tuesday night. Edmonton, Toronto, teams they've lost to this year. Blue Jackets and the Rangers, teams they've handled this year. Of course, they've beaten the Rangers all three times that they faced the Blue Shirts. Out of those 4 games, how many points do you think the Islanders will walk away with after this week or so is done?
Well, I look at it as one by one. The first two teams they're playing are teams they just absolutely absolutely positively has to be. They're going to catch the Oilers on the back end of on the second half of a back to back. They're playing in New Jersey on Monday. This is the third game in 4 days on the at the front of a 6-game road trip. This is the type of team, quite frankly, you have to bury. They're going to catch the Maple Leafs, who have been absolutely struggling, even though they beat the Oilers on Saturday night, but they have been, you know, they've really been struggling. They're going to catch the Blue Jackets on the second half of a back-to-back again. They're going to get lucky with that. And look, as far as I know, Sergei Bobrovsky's not ready to go. Columbus is, you know, Columbus works hard and all that, but they, you know, the Islanders beat them when they went to Ohio last month. And then the Rangers will be interesting because there'll be no Henrik Lundqvist this time. And I want to see how the Rangers are going to react. The Rangers will be coming off a kind of that's going to be the end of a rather nasty trip for the Rangers. They go Toronto, Denver, Phoenix, or at Glendale. They play in Glendale Saturday night, and they have to fly back here, coast to coast, 2,500 miles, and play Monday night on Long Island. And it's not the same as a back-to-back, but it's not a wonderful turnaround either. And that's the type of game, if you're Jack Capuano, you're going to tell your guys, I want you all over them at the start of the game because, you know, they may take a little while to get their legs under them. And, you know, if the Rangers are playing Cam Talbot every night of that trip, you know, that's going to be probably the biggest, I would imagine that's the biggest, sustained burst of action. That would be 6 games in a row that he's had in his NHL career. And you want to, you know, you really want to get after them right away. They should take at least 6 points. I would tell you that they'd probably be disappointed if they got anything less than 7.
Well, a very busy February for the Islanders continues. And after that, obviously, they got a road trip at Carolina before the top team in the NHL, Peter Laviolette and the Nashville Predators, come to the Coliseum on Thursday, February 19th. John, thanks as always for your time. We really appreciate it. Be sure to follow John on Twitter, at JKreiser77NHL. Enjoy the games, and we look forward to talking to you again as the season moves on.
Always good to talk, Islanders.
You've been listening to the Isles Blog Podcast. Visit nyislesblog.com for an archive of the show or subscribe to the podcast via iTunes. Follow the team on Twitter, at Islesblog, and send comments to nyislesblog@gmail.com.